This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by one of the leaders in the brain cancer, brain tumor world in the world, Dr. John Sampson. Dr. Sampson is the president of the Private Diagnostic Clinic, which is the physician group connected to Duke and Duke University Medicine. Duke has got the premier brain cancer program in the world, the nation, and so forth. He's also today an administrative leader, an entrepreneur. Thrilled to get a chance to deal with Dr. Sampson today. John, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks very much for that kind of introduction. So as you said, I see myself as a surgeon, a scientist, a leader, and entrepreneur. Most recently, I led the Department of Neurosurgery at Duke, where I was chair, and that is the organization that encompasses the Preston Robert Tisch Brain Tumor Center. And now, as you said, I lead the multi-specialty physician practice at Duke Health.
And talk to us a little bit about how Duke became so preeminent in brain cancer. What does it take to develop sort of a leading institution in a specific area? How does an organization get great in an area?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. It's service and it's success. And let me sort of unpack that a little bit for you. You know, the Preston Robert Tisch Brain Tumor Center is endowed by the Tisch family, but supported by so many others. And we have a tremendous major gifts officer, Holly Gall, who works with us. And through that generous support of philanthropists and children that go door to door raising money or that run during our Angels Walk, we've had a lot of support that allows us to provide sort of a really special treatment of patients, both from our personal level, but also from the therapies that we provide. You know, our program is currently led by David Ashley, who heads the Brain Tumor Center, but also Henry Friedman and Alan Friedman and Daryl Bigner, who have been here for some time, and really provide that consistency of care throughout everything that we do here. And more recently, we've started to develop a brain metastases program under Peter Fetchy. At the end of the day, why I think we do so well at what we do is because we have the NIH funding, we have the philanthropy, we have the caregivers to really do something that is a differentiator compared to others in the field.
You've got also very turned on leadership on the physician side and highly energized. And it's a fascinating thing to watch as an observer from the outside. Talk for a moment about a couple of the big trends in brain cancer. Then I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that are so interesting about yourself as well. Tell us a little bit about some of the big trends in brain cancer.
So brain cancer is a field that has really puzzled us for many, many years. And so we currently continue that effort to try to understand things a little bit better. I will say when I started graduate school under Daryl's leadership, he taught me something that I've used to this day. And what that is to think about new therapies as how well they deliver specificity, delivery, and heterogeneity. What I mean by that is how specific are these therapies? How well can we get them to the tumor, and how well do they deal with the idea that one tumor cell is different from another tumor cell? So I think the three big things in the field today really focus on each of those. The first is immunotherapy. The second is convection-enhanced delivery. And the third is really the genetic explosion that we're experiencing and have experienced over the past couple of decades. So immunotherapy, of course, is something that now is widely used in many cancers and has been a true lifesaver for many, many individuals. But I think it's just coming of age now in the brain tumor field. But immunotherapy allows us to really target the abnormal proteins in particular tumor cells. So it really addresses that issue of specificity. The second area is this concept of convection-enhanced delivery, where we literally put a tube into the tumor in the brain and we sort of percolate and infuse the brain with the particular therapy that we're using. And I think that allows us to get past the blood-brain barrier and really deliver the drug directly to the tumor. So that sort of gets at that issue of delivery. And then the genetics allows us to really understand at a single cell level how one cell is different from the other cell and how one cell of a tumor is different from a normal cell. And so I think if you think about the three things that I think are important in treating cancer in the brain today, it really is immunotherapy because it gives us a specific approach, convection enhanced delivery because it allows us to actually get the drug to the tumor, and finally, the understanding of the genetics, which allows us to treat individual tumor cells as individual tumor cells.
And talk about how this is sort of the specificity, the things you're talking about, how in the not too distant days, it was chemotherapy, which is more general than specific, that was the main course of treatment and radiation, and why the specificity is so important, and not that those tools aren't still used, but why the specificity is so important to the long-term health of the patient and also solving the cancers if you could solve them.
Sure. I mean, you're right. Those things are used, and they deliver some level of specificity. You know, chemotherapy and radiation tend to attack cells that divide more rapidly than other cells. But of course, as a result, you do get those side effects like hair loss or rashes and things like that, because some of our normal cells divide quite frequently as well. This really allows us to differentiate between a normal cell and a tumor cell with incredible and exquisite specificity. And in some organs, that may be less important. You know, the prostate is something that if we eliminated all normal prostate cells, men would function just fine. But in the brain, that becomes even more important because even a couple of cells over, if we eliminate those important neurons or astrocytes, it can really have a profound effect on the patient's quality of life, because what makes them is oftentimes their thoughts and their hopes and their dreams. And unfortunately, the cells that contain those things are sitting right beside the cells that we're trying to kill because they infiltrate so deeply into the brain.
And take a moment and talk about yourself. From what I read about you, learn about you, brilliant. You also, if I'm not mistaken, went through a weight loss regimen. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, you're kind to ask, and probably at your peril, I'll take a few minutes and do that, but thank you. So we did, you know, we looked at our department, the Department of Neurosurgery, when I took over, and targeted a couple of different things to address and to do that collectively with a group of people. So the weight loss really came from this concept of our culture and could we get people enthusiastic about doing something together. And it started with just a few of us. We are a relatively competitive group, and that really exploded to more than a dozen people that lost 50 pounds over a period of between 6 months and 2 years. And I'm pleased to report that actually every one of them has kept it off to this day. It's really a focus on the health of ourselves and the people around us so that we could provide better care to our patients. Some of the other things that I'm, you know, particularly proud about in our department, again, focus on the engagement of people. In our department, we wanted to improve the quality of the care that we give our patients. And one of our faculty, Oren Gottfried, really took this on and has done incredible things over the years through continuous improvement now. In our department and more broadly at Duke Health under Rick Shannon. We also looked at educational initiatives. I always thought it was important for us to be able to evaluate whether a surgeon upon graduation really has the requisite technical skills to provide high quality care to our patients. And up until now, there were very few objective tools that could do that. So we developed the surgical autonomy project with one of our residents, Andrew Cutler, and one of our faculty, Mike Hagelin. And that's now been distributed not only throughout Duke, but really throughout the nation. And of course, when we are focused on people, we need to remember that that includes all of us, the diverse population that makes up our group. And neurosurgery is not a very diverse population. It tends to be mostly men. And so we really focused on attracting women to our program and allowing their unique perspectives and their unique approach to patient care really shine through within our organization. And finally, we started a new app, an app that now has also been distributed throughout the medical center to really, it's a congratulatory app. It's a way of sending texts broadly to people to thank them for the work that they did, to for a favor that they did to help you out with a patient and those kinds of different things. So I don't think that there's anything particularly unique or special that I've done, other than perhaps really identifying great people around me and giving them the opportunity to do what they do best.
Another question. It's in terms of yourself, I know that literally, truly a genius, not a word that's used in often, or used often, but truly a genius, sort of Mensa, genius, brilliant. Do you ever think about how you've grown to be able to mix that genius with emotional intelligence as well? Because you clearly have been a leader and shining that area as well. And to your success in your professional career, what's been more valuable, the sheer intellectual genius or the emotional intelligence and emotional skills? And I know it's an embarrassing question, but if you don't mind indulging me.
Well, I'd be glad to indulge you because it's easy. I don't think I'm that smart. So I think it's nice really to have the opportunity to work with so many other individuals. And if there is such a thing that I possess as emotional intelligence, it really is understanding or seeking maybe how best to engage others that are really good at what they do. All the people that I mentioned during this interview have extraordinary talents that far exceed mine. And just being able to let them do what they do and get out of their way, not try to steal their thunder, but really, you know, add to their thunder and carry some of their water when they need it. That's what a good leader does. And that's how I've been successful.
Two more questions. Are Canadians by nature more emotionally intelligent than Americans or the same?
Boy, on election day, that's an incredible question for you to ask. So I'm not sure I'm going to touch that one at all.
You're supposed to say that we're all the same. We're all that we're all equally emotionally intelligent is the right answer. Dr. Sampson, the next question is, how long does it take to become a neurosurgeon today by the time you're done with medical school, residency, training? What age is a neurosurgeon? At what age does a person start practicing today?
So it takes a long time. Most neurosurgeons will take 4 years of college, and you know, some of them enter college at a bit younger age than others, but 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, and then there's a year of internship and 6 years of residency. So if you add all that up, that's a large number of years, and then oftentimes they'll do 1 or 2 years in fellowship. And I can tell you that even at that point, your training isn't over, because you then really learn how to hone your craft in the surgical arena. But you also may start going off in different directions, as I did, by, you know, developing some talent as a researcher. So oftentimes neurosurgeons will even do a PhD degree in the midst of all that, which is probably another 3 to 5 years. And then they may go on and get an MBA or focus on an administrative role. I tell my mentees that your goal at whatever stage of your career that you're in is to be the best person in blank field. So the blank person in neurosurgery or in academic medicine. I think that's a good guide, but I caution them now that that may only be true for you for 5 or 10 years, because the people that you mentor, the young people that are around you will do better things than you, and that's okay. And you'll go on to have different careers. I would say that I've been a surgeon, I've been a researcher, and I hope now I'm entering a phase where I can be a real leader at Duke Health and nationally to really provide the best environment for our providers and the best care for our patients.
So it really is, as you describe it, it is really a journey. You better not think, I'll kill myself through these till I'm 32, 33 to get into the spot of being a neurosurgeon or a spine surgeon, whatever it is, and then sort of, you know, enjoy my professional career. You better enjoy every part of the journey and find a way to love every part of the journey. Because if you look at it as like, oh my God, until I'm 32, 33, 34, until I get out of school or out of residency, that's no way to live. I mean, you really have to look at it as every piece of it's a journey where you're trying to do great at that part of the journey, don't you?
I think you do. I think everybody has perhaps their own perspective on life. And perhaps I just get bored too easily, but I do think it's fantastic to have the opportunity to shift careers, refocus your interest. You could do that as a surgeon. There's plenty of technical challenges in neurosurgery to hone your skills at an incredible level and change your focus in honing those skills over time. But I would encourage everybody to enjoy the journey, because otherwise you end up becoming mediocre at something, and that's something you're going to have to do for a long time. So I would always strive to improve in whatever you're doing every day.
Well, you and the team at Duke have done just magnificent work, world-renowned work in this brain cancer world, this brain cancer field, and we are all thankful for it. So thank you, Dr. Sampson, for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just magnificent and a remarkable career. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure for me to be part of the team, and a real pleasure to speak with you today.